This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
What is he? When is he? How is he? Like Casanova. When is Casanova? What is Casanova? Who is Casanova? Are we ever getting another issue again? One can only hope.
Oh, the second issue never came out?
Yeah, second issue came out. But they were like relaunching it, and now it's like 6 months and nothing.
Oh, it has not been 6 months.
It's been, I checked, it's been 6 months. It's becoming like Bendis' powers.
But it hasn't been 6 months since the last episode of Indie Comic Book Noise, because we're back, just like we said we would, with episode 366.
July 19th.
No. It's whatever day you downloaded this.
Yeah. So I guess San Diego
after
good
July 20th. No, we'll hear about that next episode from
him. Okay. Yeah,
we gotta tease it. We can't just let it out right away. You know, that's something you gotta leave a little taste in their mouth.
No. I can't believe those announcements. Like the announcement they made. Oh,
killing me. It's the magic of podcasting, folks.
Yeah.
This is Indie Comic Book Noise 366. I'm Steve Raker from the Comic Book Bunker, along with Andrew the L.A. Rabbit, and from L.A., and Phil and Kevin from Canada.
Phil the auteur.
And we are part of Derek Coward's Deliberate Noise Network. But other than that, we're sponsored by nobody, and that's why we don't have a very consistent schedule. But the other reason is because we are busy doing our sister show, the other podcast, Marvel Noise, where we talk about all things Marvel.
Yeah, if we had a Patreon, I guess that would force us to get more episodes out if people contributed ridiculous amounts of cash, I would imagine.
That's true. We'd have a responsibility, but we are truly indie. We are answerable to nobody.
This is true.
Although I do want to mention that I was invited to go to, and I am going to attend, and you should too, the Baltimore Comic Con, September 25th through 27th in Baltimore. It was a lot of fun last year, which was the first year I went, and I'm certainly going again, and it is a week later this year, almost three weeks later this year. It works great at the end of the month rather than the beginning when school's starting, if you've got kiddos, etc. But Baltimore, September.
Woo-hoo. Awesome.
I hate you guys that you go to so many cons.
I don't go to a lot of cons.
I like to go.
I don't. Well, it's just because I don't really get to go to any because there's not really much.
Do I have to drive over to Ottawa, pick you up, and bring you to Toronto for Fan Expo? Like, geez.
All right. You could be my... Yeah, I need a mule.
I have to stay overnight at your place, Phil, and then we'll take off in the morning.
That's why I don't go to the con this year, because... usually I have my friend, he's like my carrying mule, and without him, I get lost, and I have to carry things, so I can't go this year.
You know, Groot will do that. He will literally drive to Ottawa.
That's awful. Your old dad, you just let him carry around all your shit.
He serves a purpose.
Sherpa.
And now you're gonna
it's true, it keeps him busy.
To bring you from Ottawa to Toronto.
I'll start this party, if you guys don't mind.
Go for it.
It's a company we haven't talked a lot about recently, and that's Action Lab. And what the title I want to draw your attention to is Venture. Number one came out in June, and it's a creator who in the last few years have really gotten into the Jay Farber.
Wasn't that originally an Image book? One issue came out or something? Or am I crazy?
I don't think so.
And Jamal Igles. I don't, it could have, there's no reference of it in the book itself. It mentions that it was created by Jamal Igel and Jay. So I don't, maybe if they own it, they could shop it around. I mean, you'd think they would have put a reference in here, but maybe they wouldn't. I don't know. Jamal Igel is directly linked with Action Lab, as you guys may or may not know. He does a lot of their marketing, along with being a tremendous artist. Colorist James Brown, letterer Ray Dillon. And this is just Farber back in his, and also Igel back in the superhero world. And I really like, I like how he's able, we've talked about several of his other books, how he's able to quickly sort of play with the tropes in a familiar way, even though they're all new characters. And in this world, the superhero, he just acts kind of mysteriously, and no one looks like he's just wearing an outfit. So he just shows up and he saves it opens on an action scene with him saving the day. And then we cut the parallel stories with a reporter who wants to, who's caught kind of between sensational tabloid style reporting and being a real reporter. And so he's in the middle of that world. And then we find out that our superhero is really this mysterious teacher in the school, because another teacher comes up and says, oh, I was asking about you and no one knows anything about you. And he just kind of keeps himself to himself. And then it turns out in the course of rescuing a mission, our reporter ends up with footage of the hero's face. And that's kind of the end of it. So it's kind of a fun, you know, what's this guy going to do? Yeah. Is he going to turn him in? What's the hero's story? And then another little fun thing is in the middle, there's the reporter's going to a building and there's a billboard for Noble Causes the movie coming soon.
Nice.
So, from Golden Goat Studios from an Image Comics. And that's the type of ridiculous things that I enjoy in my comic books. But yeah, Eigel has done big two work. You guys, Molly Danger, wasn't that?
Name? He's got a Kickstarter currently running.
Yeah. So, you know, like a guy that, you know, can bring the goods in the superhero world. And as you guys know, I'm going crazy for Noble Causes. And Steve, you reviewed his vampire girlfriend detective book that I just picked up the trade of and liked.
Yep.
Night Shift, was that it?
Graveyard Shift.
Graveyard Shift.
Yeah.
So this is him back in the superhero world, and I just wanted to give a shout out because, like I said, I haven't brought up Action Lab in a while. I feel kind of bad. You know, they're an indie. They're one of the non-premier indie comic books. So, gonna love you things, right?
It seems like every episode I keep mentioning another digital book that is released through Monkey Brain, and this time around is no different. A book that I've gotten digitally through Comixology, Don't Be Fooled by the Jess Smart Smiley cover. It's Amazing Forest number 10. And I talked a few episodes ago about the Amazing Forest anthology series and how much I enjoyed it. And this issue, the newest issue, was just as fantastic as the best of the previous bunch. And the deal here is Amazing Forest is written by Eric Freitas and Ulysses Farinas. And each issue is 2 8-page stories handled by different artists. And these guys have become the masters of the 8-page tale. I just love these stories. They get so much world building. And like, there's so many of these stories where I would like to read a several issue series about the world that they depict here. This issue, no different. There are two stories. One is called Last of the Hugaboos, which is drawn by Adrian Bago. Mind-altering 8-pager. There's this soldier. He's the best damn soldier they've ever had type guy. And he's being debriefed. He's been crying for weeks. And he's being debriefed by, like, senior officers in a interrogation room. And this guy's no softy, even though he's crying. This guy has killed over 1,000 bugaboos in the theater of war over the last 3 years since this whole bugaboo thing has started. And, I'm sorry, bugaboos. The hugaboos.
Hugaboos would be something else.
But the hugaboos, they have been stealing pets. No one knows why. We assume probably to eat or something like that. And this soldier, he is part of this crack team of commandos for ARTS, which is the Animal Recon Terror Squad. And the more hugaboos they kill, it just doesn't seem to stop. The more pets keep getting taken. And on this one raid, the soldier, he shoots up a whole bunch of hugaboos, but in the pile of hugaboo corpses, he sees a human child's face at first. And he keeps looking at it, and it kind of changes, and then it kind of, he just sees another hugaboo, And then, like, did he really see that? And now he's messed up. And he ends up getting captured or at least confronted by the Hugaboos. And really a horrible truth that involves hallucinogenic gas pumped into the populace's air and an underground revolution. And I won't spoil the goods or the ending, but all this in an 8-page story, dude. It's intense. Then the other one, did I mention that this issue's, it's only 99 cents and you get these two stories? The second issue is called Villain's Friend, and it was drawn by Jack Forbes. And here we're introduced to a world where 100 years ago, a supervillain conquered the Earth, enslaving the whole human race after killing every superhero known to man except for one, who is this now aged, shackled, emaciated Superman-type analog who was defeated, then kept alive, first as a trophy, but then, because he's kind of around, he slowly is becoming the guy's, like, friend. He becomes, like, his equivalent of, like, a bridge partner or someone to play cards with, almost a confidant, and then eventually an advisor and a messenger, even. But he's still in shackles, and every once in a while, the supervillain has to take him back out, publicly humiliate him, and beat the crud out of him, and break his legs and stuff in front of the populace just to remind him who's boss. And then he kind of goes back to behind the scenes, like, trying to be friendly with this guy, and you don't ever get to see the thoughts of the hero, knowing whether he, how much he's, you know, what he really thinks of this guy. But this uber villain, he's a great destroyer and conqueror, right? But he's not that good of a ruler. Like, he makes a food shortage crisis really worse by feeding hungry humans the remains of their own dead, which then just killed more. And then he's just thinking, well, but then that doesn't provide more food? Isn't that just a great solution? And it's like, no, dude. He can't win people over through his actions, and this hero figure that still is alive in shackles is still mythologized and a hero of the people. And he realizes, this uber-villain, that he could probably win the people over in this great public relations move if he flies out into space and destroys an incoming asteroid that's on a collision course. And he brings his idea to his lieutenants, but the beaten old hero guy, he already, like, has made the calculations and, like, parabolically and given credit by the whole, like, he saved us again. Look, if you fly up there and hit it, you'll be able to, in this precise point, you'll destroy it, just like, you know, this hero guy has suggested. And it's like, oh, man, he's going to get credit for this, too. And he gets, well, this kind of pisses off this despot villain type. And there's actually 3 pages left of this 5-pager at this point for him to act on what these feelings are. And it's really good. I wish I could, like I said, read a several issue story taking place either before, during, or after this world. So much is alluded to. There's so much story in here between Frida's and Farina's. They keep coming up with cool stuff issue after issue. Amazing Forest. I've been getting them through Comixology.
Yeah, I want to get that comic. I'm hoping to find it in trade one day.
Maybe it's in the Evernote. You want it in print.
So,
digital front, Steve.
I don't want
it. It'll be like Private Eye, never to be, you know, reprinted in paper.
Private Eye's coming out.
Private Eye's coming out for print.
Yeah. I never believed it. Like, people can, you know, this is never, and I'm like, you know, I'm like, yeah, okay, sure. And, you know, that's
they
my
can
response.
Make money, it's coming out.
Just like, you know, Valiant, a retailer exclusive, never to be printed anywhere else. And then I'm always like, yeah, okay, sure.
You sound bitter tonight.
I am a little bitter about that.
I can believe that some covers, I bet they keep to them.
No, you know, it's the story. Or whatever. You keep stories, too, to, you know, exclusive stories.
Yeah, that's no fair. But usually it makes it in a trade eventually. Like, Savage Dragon number 0 was like that, but eventually, or half, or one of those.
I was just thinking of that.
Yeah, but then it came in Image, the hardcover there, I believe,
the first time. The anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people can say things, but we'll see. If like, you know, in 50 years it's not reprinted again, I'll be like, well, I guess, you know, you stuck to your guns, but we'll see.
And plus, we live in a time now where webcomics do get printed a lot, so it's kind of good. Like, I read a lot of webcomics now, but it's because I read it in trade. And it's, so it's a lot more accessible now that way.
I'll talk about one. I got something that's the earliest Matt Kint you can probably, well, there's two Pistol Whip series anyways. I'm not quite sure if the Pistol Whip graphic novel or the Pistol Whip issue came out first, but 2001 anyways, I think they both came out with. So this is Pistol Whip Presents Mephisto and the Empty Box from Top Shelf Productions. And this isn't just Matt Kint that I'm, you know, probably mentioned on here many times that I'm a huge fan of.
Is this his, like, early work?
Yeah, like, that's what I mean. This is either his first or second work. But this is the same series either way. But he also has Jason Hall here. It says writing and layouts, and he has artwork and additional layouts. And they also have someone down for costume design and additional art direction. So I don't know how that balances out exactly, but I think this has been reprinted by Dark Horse now in full color, because this original issue that's magazine-sized is all black and white, so you can get all the Pistol Whip stuff in one place now, rather than get the old black and white trade stuff. Unless you like that stuff. Like, I like having this as like a standalone magazine. And the inside cover has like one of those sort of like old-timey ad things where they would give you instructions about stuff. Or, like, tell you things you could buy, or here's a magic trick, or whatever. You know, we've, on our classic episodes, we usually make note of the crazy things they used to sell, or whatever, in the old times. But this story, anyways, is about a magician, where he has a little Mephisto box, I guess you could say. Like, it's a magician's box, but there's, like, the devil's head, you know, Mephisto, on the front of the box. Cool. So he's like doing some kind of tricks thing, and rabbits come out of it. Hey, Andrew, rabbits.
I like that.
I knew you'd like that. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's like in the future, and then they go, well, 6 years ago, 8 years ago, I mean. So you're like, what is going on there? Because you don't really know what the context is until you read the story. So yeah, there's this guy that has this box, and he asks for a volunteer, and then this dude is like forcing his wife to go out there. She's like, I don't want to go, and he's like, get up there. So she goes into this box, and the magician makes her disappear, but there's like this other rival, this magician, I guess the magician's feud over secrets and everything, and he's like, I'll make you disappear. He, like, brandishes a gun, shoots the guy, and then kills himself. So then they're like, oh, man, this isn't good. So, you know, that husband that forced his wife to go into the box, he checks the box, and she's, like, not in there. So they have a whole sequence where they're, like, he's, like, not interviewing people, but it's one of, I think of it like Powers, when they have, like, that page of, like, all those different people, but this is less people, and those people have, like, stories to tell. Well, maybe she ran off, or the police are like, oh, well, there was something else going on with these magicians and everything, but if you find out anything, tell us about it or whatever. So this guy eventually, like, becomes a magician himself and comes into possession of that box, and he's, like, trying to find his wife and everything, and he contemplates suicide and all this stuff. And then you get a sort of ambiguous ending. I'm not going to really go into it, but I thought it fit right into, like, the types of stories that Kint likes to tell. I don't, and, you know, he's a fan of, like, the twisty Twilight Zone stuff and espionage and stuff like that. I think this is less refined and less like less ambitious and everything, but it's still really interesting. And I love his style, so. So I would definitely recommend this 24-pager, like if you want to get the original thing, or you know, just get that awesome collection that came out.
Phil.
Well, I think it's time for another segment of the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Uh-oh.
Come on, Steve, don't let me down this episode. So first up is issue 5 of The Crossed 100 by Alan Moore. This issue was awesome. For the first time, I could read the dialogue, because I don't know if you remember, but because it was the future, all the humans talked really weird and used different words, so you had to read the comic twice to kind of understand what they were saying. And so it really hurts your brain to read it, but for some reason I'm still collecting it. And this issue, some of the survivors, they find a camp, and it's a crossed camp. And they haven't come across in a long time. And they find all these books and videos the cross made. And this cross camp lives like normal humans like us. Like, they're civilized, they talk normal. And I finally got to read an issue with, like, real dialogue. And it was really great. And then the survivors just start killing all the women and children in this cross camp because all the other cross are out hunting or something. And it was just a great issue. The bad is Age of Reptiles, the new miniseries.
Aww.
I know. I love the Age of Reptiles stuff. I have no problem with the art or anything, but for some reason when I read this new mini, my mind just wanders. The other stuff, it never did. So maybe it's just the mind state I was in, I don't know, but I'm not enjoying this one at all like I was previous ones. And there's two issues of that so far. And then the ugly is Elf Thing, which is from Eclipse Comics in the 80s, I believe, which is a parody, a mix between ElfQuest and Man-Thing. And it's just, basically it's about a Man-Thing creature. Like, there's a group of Man-Thing creatures, and one of them goes through the like process like Swamp Thing did, and ends up turning human. Or not human, sorry, but into an elf. So it's just him struggling, and it's just full of really, I know it's dated, but just horrible jokes, and just strange things happen for no reason, and it ends off with an elf orgy. But yeah, I don't think it's ever worth reading. But I started buying all these old fantasy books and stuff because I started playing D&D. So I've just been buying all these old comics like those, and there's a lot in the 80s.
Absolutely. Eclipse alone, my gosh.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I ordered a bunch of number ones, so I'm going to be trying them out and talking about them on the show as we go on.
All right.
I think at least for a while, all of ElfQuest was online, and you could just read it.
Mm-hmm. And they're doing the final quest right now.
Dig up that link if you need it.
I have a good portion of the ElfQuest comics, actually.
Got any more, Andrew?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'd like to revisit our friends at Titan Comics. Thought I'd do a little quick twofer here, sort of taking on Phil's topic, but not in the same way. Surface Tension is one new title. That's Jay Gunn. That's kind of one of these. He's like a one-man written illustrated. I mean, he has a letterer, Jimmy Betancourt and Albert Deschain, and an editor, but otherwise it's all him. And so I went through the first two issues, and there's been this weird plague hit the earth where it was like this calling where people just kind of walked into the sea. They called it the seasickness. And so these people, they just disappeared all around the world, and it kind of destroyed a lot of the world. And then suddenly this opens up with some of the people are now returning from the sea, and they're all blue and everything's all weird looking. So it's one of these kind
odd
of
people.
Strange, yeah, horror sort of, and it turns out that one of the people returning was a scientist, and they were studying this weird coral, and it's like the earth kind of healing itself, but in the process it's sort of attacking humans, So it's a relationship. And so if you like that kind of bizarre, horror, weird creatures kind of mutating and sort of hive mind, because these creatures, once they're absorbed, they have the hive mind. But there's a few that have escaped. So if you like that type of, it does feel kind of, wouldn't be out of place in like a 70s horror type idea. But I mean, it's not like bloody or anything, but it's that idea. And then the other one is Death Sentence London, number one. I decided to do this because last time I thought we talked about the first Death Sentence, but apparently we didn't. This is the sequel, and it's script Montanaro, art Martin Simmons, lettering the same team as lettering from Surface Tension. And the gist of Death Sentence is that there's this VD called G+. And so if you have unprotected sex and you get it, you get 6 months to live, but you develop a superpower. So it's like Strike Force Moratori meets, you know, sexual activity, so to speak. So the first one has like one of these people ends up blowing up London. So it starts right in the aftermath of the battle. And the government's now developing countermeasures against that stop the disease. Art's this impressionistic, somewhat painted, somewhat kind of surreal that I like, because a lot of the powers are kind of crazy. So the question is, I hope they really stick to the six-month thing. That was one thing I kind of always get sad about with moratorium, was they kind of abandoned that. Where I like having sort of automatic, like, it makes it difficult because you have to keep getting the readers to buy into new characters and everything. But it makes it an interesting world. But anyways, if you like Death Sentence, the new series is out. I read some of the first one. I didn't remember it, but there's a beautiful recap on the side page that gets you right up to speed. And that's what's going on with our friends at Titan Comics. There's a little twofer.
Hmm. Hellboy.
Uh-oh.
Hellboy.
You hear the news about Hellboy?
What? Oh, that...
He's moving to DC Comics?
No, an artist was going to be drawing him, right?
That's nice when another artist draws him sometimes.
Yeah.
No, is this a joke now or not? Because, never mind.
Oh, don't leave me hanging.
No, if I make reference, I'll timestamp things. Or not.
I love timestamps. July 19th.
I know this is not recently at a local LCS, so I went and picked up one of the Hellboy and Hell trades and got him to sign it. And the guy in front of me had this big full page of his original art that he was getting signed.
Nice. Wow. I like that artist edition a lot. So,
always made me feel like, you know, what do you do? It's tough to follow a guy.
Right.
You know, you're staring at the page, and there's just nothing to say when someone whips out the page of original art, and you're left there just kind of drooling a little.
I was accidentally on mute, but another Titan comic that you guys should really try out is the new Tank Girl they put out. It's like an anthology. It's really good.
Hmm. Phil, what's your history with Hellboy?
I've read pretty much everything except for maybe skipped a mini here and there kind of thing.
Wow, really?
Yeah, and all the BRPD stuff I've read.
Wow. How about you, Kevin?
I still have to catch up on my library editions there. What was the last one I read? Volume 4, maybe?
Okay.
I've only read a handful, to be honest with you. Right.
Me, it's the newer stuff I'm missing.
I've read all the Mignola drawn stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I've read all the Richard Corbin drawn stuff.
I love that stuff.
And I've read a smattering of the other stuff. I've really read none of the BPRD solo stuff.
So good.
Oh, I know it's good. I just haven't, and there's so many issues.
I think it's better than Hellboy, personally.
What I did just pick up, though, while I'm not a regular reader of, like I said, the BPRD or of Abe Sapien, I like those characters. And with Abe Sapien number 23 from Dark Horse being penned by Mike Mignola and then drawn and colored and lettered, Andrew, by Kevin Nolan, I had to give it a shot, right? And Abe Sapien is at 23, his solo series. Of course, now I want to go back and read the previous 22 issues of Abe. But for now, issue 23. Yeah, right. And he's had all the minis as well.
Yeah. It's kind of amazing that he's become his own character in a book like that himself.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I've heard that the series is going to delve into some of his, like him searching for his origins and stuff with Mignola writing. So I'm going to keep reading the current series from here on out, as well as picking up some back issues.
I think he has to be the one that does that stuff.
This issue 23 is a done-in-one with the Nolan art. Hellboy and Abe are reunited in British Columbia after the events of Hellboy the Troll Witch. Mm-hmm. And they seemingly serendipitously come across a fresh murder scene and a subsequent investigation, and they offer to help and get themselves involved with the locals. And there's a legendary 70-foot-long lake monster named Ogopogo around these parts. So Abe and Hellboy investigate, and with a lake monster, Abe's able to go underwater and stuff, and it gets really good. What can I tell you? Like I said, I'll be reading more Abe Sapien, especially the Mignola-written issues. This was really, really enjoyable stuff. Kevin?
I got two sort of like preview books, because, you know, they throw them up on Comixology there, and then I'm like, I will read these. So first up is One Punch Man from Viz Media. They had the first three chapters. And I think it really regularly shows up in Shonen Jump. And a really simple idea, but I kind of knew that. But I kind of like these where you take some kind of concept, like some kind of high concept, and then run it for like all it's worth. So I'm like, well, this should be like a good test, like a good 70 pages, and see what I'm in for, see if I want to continue. So, yeah, it's like the superhero that, you know, he basically goes up against all these villains, and he can knock them out with like one punch. So he gets bored, or he goes, oh, this isn't that fulfilling, or whatever. Like it's not like there's a lot of fighting. It doesn't really go that in depth, and I wonder if it will at some point, but I'm sort of just fascinated by that kind of concept and where you could go. Like, this is sort of like if you're going to do a 24-hour comic, like you give someone like that concept, and then everyone would, like, in even a school like activity, and everyone would create their own comics around that, and then you would see how many different variations or what people did. I don't know, I just find like that idea fascinating. So I think I'm going to continue with this and see where it goes and what they can do with this idea, because I think it's kind of interesting, and if they will, like, even though it's in Shonen Jump, which is, you know, like for boys, so I don't know if they will get into heavy philosophy or whatever direction you pick, but I want to find out. And the other preview thing was the, I don't know if any of you guys regularly check these out, like from like the image expos that go on.
I do.
Yeah, so they had a preview book. So they had six titles in here. So I kind of checked that out, see which ones I'm kind of interested. I think I naturally skew to things that are going to come out in, like, in a few months or this fall. Like, some of the things titles in here were like, seems like we're announced 6 months or a year ago, and that, like, that doesn't make me too excited. Like, I get more excited as things come. It's like you tell me, like, well, this movie's gonna be coming out in 2020, and I'm just like, okay, like, maybe in 2019 I'll be way more excited. So
you're too connected, Kevin.
Yes. So they have a new Rucka series in here with art by Nicola Scott. So
yeah, that looks good.
Yeah, that was just, like, just announced, and it says it's gonna be out in October. So I'm like, awesome! Like that gets me more pumped.
What's that one about again?
Witches in the Woods. It looks like
Black Magic.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there wasn't a lot that got me excited out of those new ones they announced, though. Unfortunately,
I just wonder what certain books will be like. I think all of them had a pretty good hook, but
Yeah, there's always more anyway. So
how about the goddamned from Jason Aaron and
there's
Aram Gwira. That was really funny, the sequence that they showed of the guy face down in the shit pond and the kid's taking a piss, and then he keeps saying, "You were in the shit pond," and they keep going back to it again and again. It's funny.
Like I love all Jason Aaron's work pretty much, but that was the one I was probably least interested in because I'm like, I just don't know. It's like a Joe Casey thing with when they had Butcher Baker. I'm like, that preview does nothing for me. If I pre-ordered it, it was a good book. But sometimes you see something and you're like, I don't know. But it's sort of like one of those things when you get a preview. I just remember like a famous thing from Fantagraphics. It was like one of their anthologies. I'm like, six out of the 10 pages were just people pissing off of trees and everything. And I'm like, that does nothing for me. Like, nothing says indie comics. Nothing? Like,
sure?
People just going around and pissing on everything. Like, literally, like...
It's quality storytelling.
So, I don't know about that one, like... I don't know, I thought that artwork looked really good, though. Maybe it was just the differences between Scalped or whatever, I don't know. Like, I wasn't a huge fan of the artwork on Scalped from Vertigo, but this looks
good
fine.
From time to time, it just depends who the artist was, but
yeah,
there were some good ones.
And, like, I love how Pretty Deadly looks like, but... The story I'm not as engaged, so I don't know. I just thought it was an interesting thing to go through and read, and
yeah, always fun to page through and see the art. I did the same thing for all those DC preview things. Just flip through them and see what the art looks like, see what the storytelling is like, see if anything catches your eye. Why not? It's free. It's digital.
Yeah,
you just tap a little faster if you need to.
Or you can read the small 8 pages. Jeez.
Phil, what you've been reading?
Well, I think we should talk about the elephant in the room.
Huh? Yes.
What you dirty Americans are going to do to us in like 100 years from now.
Oh, Magnifest Destiny.
Nope.
That's because you guys bombed the White House.
We burned it down before, yeah.
I don't know if that's what happened.
I think it's pretty clear, finally, the Canadian aggression is unveiled. Everyone knows it's there. Everyone knows. Canada's a bunch of bloodthirsty killers.
All I know is my children are going to be dead in the future.
They already took over half of the comic book industry, so, you know.
But yeah, I believe this is one Steve wanted to talk about, and I was very excited to do too. We Stand on Guard by Brian K. Vaug and Steve Skroes. Is that pronounced
right? Scroce? I heard some people say. I'm not sure.
Yeah, Scroce.
And I love him. His first series was a series I love from Marvel called Ecto Kid by Marvel's Razor Line. And I've enjoyed a lot of his work since then, too.
The Matrix?
I don't know. He did The Matrix?
He did work on The Matrix.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, he got out of comics after doing a lot of X-Books for Marvel. And
Spider-Man, too.
Went to...
the movie storyboards.
To work in the movies and stuff. Yeah. But I got to say, his art has never looked better than it does here. Oh, my gosh.
I know. It's different, eh? Yeah.
The girls' faces are pretty. The guys' faces look all different rather than looking lumpy the same. I really liked it. Really, really enjoyed it.
I also enjoyed Matt Hollingsworth has a real light touch to the colors.
Yep.
That I think complements it. Sometimes, you know, it's not that really saturated. Like, it's bright. But it's also light.
Well, yeah. Well, they're stuck in the Canadian wilderness for a lot of the, like, the snowy Canadian wilderness. So they,
because my city gets bombed.
Well, like you said, it's 100 years in the future.
But I found out why Brian K. Vaughan uses Ottawa a lot. It's because his wife's from here.
I should be glad at least Tim Horton makes it there.
Yeah, even Tim Horton makes a scene.
Yeah, it starts off really creepy. You get to see this family of four that you're introduced to, and it's on the day that the U.S. bombs Canada after suspecting Canada for bombing the White House.
Oh, it's not because they want our resources?
Please, we know Canada.
You guys shit your resources away.
We wanted resources.
Now
we
want
just
our nice
Alaska.
We got no, because they mentioned the here about how you guys want our water.
It's the giant Tim Hortons, prominently displayed in the middle of the panel on that, about 3 pages in.
As long as you don't tap Vancouver, you know.
that family at the beginning that we're introduced to, they totally get demolished and destroyed. But the youngest one lives, her brother does too, but he gets captured. The youngest one lives to grow up to be this good-looking, well-designed hunter type.
You're hot on
trick.
This girl. She's getting you frisky.
Well, I'm surprised for Scroogey. He draws a really pretty looking girl, and she's the protagonist, and she's like in the snow, dressed in white. She's got red hair. It's a really well designed image.
Hard nips under there too.
Right cool. To the like you said, Andrew. Right to the Hollingsworth colors and the shadowing of having, you know, she's wearing white, and you're in the Canadian wilderness in snow. That's a tough challenge for a colorist, and they does a really nice job. She is a hunter of prey. She's a fighter of these U.S. militia mechs that fly around.
Yeah, it seems the U.S. uses a lot of robots.
Yeah, well, they don't want to send drones their people and stuff out there. And mm-hmm. In this issue, she becomes the new recruit of this underground rebellion outfit, the 24, that we're introduced to. They take down this giant mech in the wilderness, and there are some well-crafted surprises in the encounter, to say the least. It's graphic. People get blown up pretty good. Man, I can't wait to see what happens. I have no idea what the story really is going to be. But
it's about Canada winning their freedom back.
No, Steve wants us to be taken down.
We're the heroes here.
If you rewind the tape, he's like, I hope they get you good. That's what he said.
Yeah, what do you mean you don't know what the story's about? You can't recognize that the Canadians are the good guys here?
No, she's the loner outsider. They make they don't quite trust her, but they're bringing her into her outfit. What is their outfit really about? What's their government like at this time? Is it going to be a story that's kind of cliched? Is it going to be, you know, I don't know what they're going to do with it. I don't think it's clear. All they've done is introduce the players on the board and have them meet.
You'll probably be the bad guys.
And on the cover, for sure.
There's no way they can. They deliberately portray the Americans, and the one American character is this fat, cowardly looking dude, and it's like, yeah, because no one in our military would be in shape or anything. Because, you know, we're American. That's the joke. All Americans are fat. Get it?
But you wouldn't need to if you're doing these mechs all the time. Like, you just pop on your stuff.
It's
and
true.
You
but generally speaking,
it's like that movie.
The military people I've met tend to be in pretty decent shape.
It's a good book, and the mechs pilots. Look cool.
The mechs are very badass. Like, I like that there's a bunch of different designs, too.
Did you guys see the sketches in the back?
Yeah.
Yeah, those were really nice. Some of the upcoming characters, I guess.
And the whole thing of them taking down the mech, the big mech in the snow all from the ground, a bunch of freedom fighters, it felt like Empire Strikes Back, like them taking down one of the big AT-ATs, you know? It just had, it was a fun scene.
Yeah. Best Star Wars scene.
The thing that makes the comics work better is they can make the mechs super impossible. Like, they don't have to really think about the physics or how it moves or, you know what I mean? You can just make it look crazy and fun and cool. Like, you don't got to be like, well, that wouldn't really work, or how does that go? That if it was a moving image, you might have to wrestle more with that kind of, you know, how does it look?
You know what image really works for me is, in the way you just talked, is the one scene where she first comes across the crew and they're just standing there and the girl cocks her shotgun.
Yeah,
I found that really felt like a movement, almost like I heard it click and everything, like it was happening.
It's a good book.
Andrew. It made me laugh. laugh. Okay, so I'm going to pick one I think Phil might have read or would like. Because he mentions this creator a fair amount, and his new, we haven't talked a lot about his publishing company, but that's Black Mask. And it's a Steve Niles.
Okay, I haven't tried that.
I'm talking about the Disciples particularly, and that's the Steve Niles Christopher Mitten, colors by Jay Fotos, lettered by Thomas Maurer. And Black Mask, they got a lot for Occupy Comics. That was like probably their big famous book, I would say.
So was it, you boys remember that, sir? Their Occupy Comics
from a couple years ago. I'm just trying to think of what their highest profile.
Oh yeah,
line. Didn't they do the Occupy Comics one?
I think
they
so.
Also have, they've had a few titles. It's not like they're not a big concern. Like, it's not like some massive Eastern publishing syndicate or something. But it's this fun little company, and I know, Phil, we've talked Frankenstein Alive Alive, and I think you've mentioned some other Niles books.
So yeah, I usually get a lot of his, yeah.
If you had, I didn't hear that one, though. The Black Mask Studios comics book. Well, I know they also have one. I mean, he's been super busy lately, but they've got the one, the Grant Morrison book coming out, which I was kind of interested in because it's got the Vanessa Del Rey art, and she's really interesting. She did those Boom crime books. But anyways, they're making this, I believe, as an option to be a TV show. I don't know if it's going to be a comic book going, but I guess Wes Craven is looking to make it into a TV show. But the idea is a space horror, you know, like Alien. And so here it's some crew, the same kind of thing, like just this sort of spunky group, and they're sent out on this mission, and their mission is to go rescue this this rich kid. You know, the family wants him brought back. You know, that kind of typical one. And it starts with this weird kind of, the scene plays out, and then the woman wakes up. It ends horribly, and then she wakes up, and you're like, boy, that was a weird nightmare. But then later on, the same sequence starts to happen almost in real life. So you wonder if it's more a premonition. But they keep the crew nice and short, which is nice. But basically, they go into hypersleep or deep sleep. You know, they have all these different... When people do space travel, they go into suspended animation, and they always have some goofy way to do it. So they go out, when they show up, like, everything is not right. And it ends up with this whole monster thing at the end that comes out, and it's like this woman, and she's got this umbilical cord coming out, and like kind of a Star Child thing floating, and this sort of horror, creepy, monster-looking thing. And that's the first issue. And then in the back, they have this preview, which, as you know, I'm not a huge fan of. I guess it makes sense, but they don't... I'm probably a bad choice. That just makes it random. But
I think it's better just to have teaser images or things like that, posters.
Because once you have a feel for the art, that's more than a couple of five pages. But I guess if people like it, they like it. But anyways, I just thought I'd throw this out there, mainly for Phil or people that like space horror.
Might be something. Sounds like something I would like for sure. It I've never seen Black Mask, you said, is the company. I haven't seen that at my comic store yet. So I'd have to space pretty, horror, I think.
Okay, they're pretty small. I think they probably are online. I don't know what the... You know, sometimes these companies come and go without much fanfare. They've been around for a couple of years now. So I've got my fingers crossed that it's, you know, you never want to see these companies not make it. They also released the Toe Tag Riot. That was a Kickstarter. I don't know if you guys were familiar with that one.
No, but if they're doing a TV show, that... Sometimes that's when the company closes down because they end up doing that stuff instead if it's a small one.
Yeah, that could be as well. But what's weird is there's also talk about I was going through their website a little bit, and they have Five Ghosts here. And I'm like, I thought Five Ghosts was Image.
It was.
They're doing it to work with them expand it to TV. That's what it is. Yeah, so maybe it's more of a media thing than it is a comic book company. I don't know. But anyways, I've read some of their stuff. It's always fun. As Phil noted, the distribution for some of these things is always kind of like, well, are they going to get it or not?
At first I thought you said space whore, and I was all excited for like some trucker alien whore going around on these adventures or something.
Like, the creature at the end, it is like...
Steve Niles' space horror.
Yeah.
Like, it is some kind of body horror, because there's, like I said, it's an umbilical cord coming out, and this weird womb creature.
I was trying to think of how it was a insightful commentary on the Aliens movies by saying that it's like space horror. I'm like, really? Is that really what you think of those Aliens movies?
But just some weird smaller comics for you. I mean, I can give you more regular, bigger company like IDW or Boom Book if you guys want. But
sure.
I feel like you're taking a dig at me when you say that.
I just thought, I know you like Steve Niles, so I thought,
I do. He's, not, he's good to talk to if you ever meet him at a con, too.
Yeah, about Onyx from IDW. I always think of that Slam by Onyx, the hip-hop group. This is Chris Royale, Gabriel Rodriguez, and the reason it links in, it's J Photos on Colors again. And Onyx, as the back matter readily talks about, is has at least a partial inspiration from ROM. And so I don't know if you guys have seen this one, but
I picked it up, but I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, kind of the silver armor look and kind of light-based weapons. So I can see that. But basically, the story is the Onyx character. It's the future of Earth in the future, and it's sort of a bit of a... And another mention reference I mentioned is 2080. It's very... They have, like, mega cities, so population control and resources is a big deal. And this meteor strikes... And soon after the meteor strikes, Onyx lands. And Onyx is from a world where that meteor represents this kind of contagion that once it hits the Earth, it mutates all organic life. And once it's infected you, you know, you've got no hope. You've got to be destroyed. So, and there's a crack military squad sent to investigate these things. And that's when they run into Onyx, and Onyx is killing them. The spore-infested mutate creatures. It ends up killing a person. And like, whoa, 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 this guy's no good. And Onyx is like, no, that person's been infected. And my blade, my weapons only kill those infected. So she throws this, like, you guys remember Call, the movie, the sci-fi movie?
Yep.
Like, imagine that sort of weapon, but only made of, like, light energy. So it's like this boomerangy thing with blades that she throws. Yeah, oh, sorry, that was a spoiler. Onyx is a lady.
Oh.
So it's that whole, but it's that whole kind of like, you know, the space knight coming down to fight the other alien infiltration, and the military guys are have that dual purpose because they don't really trust Onyx, and they're going to use Onyx, but they're like, you know, we have their own secret agenda, and they're going to do in, and they've got Psy troopers again. Like I said. Seems like a bit more of a serious match. They took like some of the kind of ideas of 2080, but not the ridiculousness of it, and mixed it with a bit of ROM sensibility and aliens coming in. Just kind of fun, you know.
Yeah, it looked like a good read to me. Yeah, like a nice thick good read.
And IDW has like 100 covers, so I ended up picking up the Alan Robinson After Jack Davis cover.
I got the one where she's just standing still on the cover, like just normal pose.
Yeah, there's all kinds of fun. What I really like is that they put all these different ones in the backside cover.
Yeah, I like looking at them and then get sad over the one I should have took.
Yeah, at least you know. Sometimes you wouldn't even know that they existed. What good is that?
I'd rather just not know. Because, man, I really regret an Angel cover I got. I went home with an Angel cover, then I got home, looked inside, saw the one I could have grabbed. And I remember being depressed for like months.
Months?
So I'm sure.
Months. Couldn't have gotten the one by the interior artist.
Someone will edit the appropriate Slam song on this episode.
The what?
Boot to the head?
The song by Onyx, Slam. It was their big hit in the early 90s.
Oh, I thought that you were going 70s or 80s again.
No, no, I think maybe they were around back then. They just had like one, I think they had one big hit, and that was the Slam song from like then.
Would you say they were a one-hit wonder?
I would guess so.
You guys keep calling out these audio drops, and you expect this to be out by the 19th?
Oh, you mean the 18th?
Oh, you mean 2014? Phil just keeps pushing it back. We're going to drop it in a wormhole and release it 200 years ago.
Soon enough, Doctor Who, I'll figure it out.
All right, gang, why don't we make this the end of the episode. When we next meet, we can hear about Andrew at San Diego Comic-Con, and we can hear about more indie books, the ones I read on the beach, the ones you guys read while I was on the beach.
All right.
Sound good? And we should do a classic episode one of these days again.
I've got lots lined up already, ready to go.
Oh, boy, here we go.
We should do an all Valiant episode. Yeah, you know what I'm talking about.
Why don't you do that while I'm on vacation?
Yeah, I'll do a Valiant episode with you, Cap.
Go for it.
Awesome. Supplemental.
And Andrew's read a lot of Valiant.
Yeah. I mean, I haven't read as much as you guys. And I really haven't read hardly any old Valiant, to be honest with you.
Same here.
In the meantime, you can find us on Twitter, on Facebook. On Twitter, we're at comic book or at Indie Comic Book N. We're at Steve Raker, at Me and My Sloth, at WWXKev, and at LA_Rabbit1. You can also find us over on our sister show, Marvel Noise, where we're talking about all things Marvel. But until then, get in where you fit in and read some indie comics, like we do.
Up alone. 'Cause the world